from the Mutual Broadcasting System. This is STRAT, Strategic Risk Assessment Talk. Now, retired Marine Intelligence Officer and globally recognized risk expert, Hal Kempfer.
Welcome to STRAT, Strategic Risk Assessment Talk, and thanks for tuning in and listening or watching or both, if you will. Today, I'm gonna talk about a couple of different things. And really what it is, if I was to sum it up, it's the focus on the Western Hemisphere. And it's not just, you know, not just South America, it's not just the narco cartels, but also very much stuff that's happening here at home with the deployment of federalized National Guard troops. So I'm gonna get into all this, you know, the troops going to our major cities here in the U.S. And then I'm going to talk about the kind of growing warlike structure, if you will, the warlike posture with what have been called narco or redesignated narco terrorist organizations. All right, just kind of bring it all together a little bit. In 2025, throughout this year, the Trump administration has had the National Guard deployed to various U.S. cities around the country. Los Angeles figure very prominently within that. Now, this was stated publicly primarily to address crime and terrorism. In Washington, D.C., because that is a federal district and there is no governor and it doesn't have a sovereign state status under the Constitution, they can address crime much more directly because it's always in a federal status there. But within the states, it's mostly been to deal with immigration issues, which is protecting federal property, which was a site of protests against the ICE immigration raids, or to protect federal agents who are out there actually doing immigration enforcement. And this has sparked a lot of controversy. It sparked a lot of legal challenges. And the Trump administration has basically been using troops to deal with that situation. Now, they initiated the National Guard troops to select cities in the U.S. This was appeared to be part of a broader strategy to combat not just undocumented aliens living in the country, but also to combat things like crime, as we saw in Washington, D.C. In Washington, D.C., they had the troops actually combating homeless situations, dealing with homeless camps, and basically kind of, you know, cleaning up, if you will, from a visual appearance, what Washington, D.C. looks like. But then you saw it kind of grow. You know, Los Angeles in June of 2025, that expanded to Washington, D.C. afterwards, which was a little bit different in August, if you will. And then there was a discussion of plans for Chicago, New York, Baltimore, San Francisco, Oakland. That has expanded beyond that. There's about 2,000 National Guard troops mobilized. It's getting more every day. It's not hundreds of thousands. It's not tens of thousands, though, but it is thousands, about 800 when D.C., D.C. was kind of interesting because you had them use the Compact States Agreement, which is a mutual assistance compact between the various states, but Washington, D.C. is a signatory to that compact. But when a governor sends troops to Washington, D.C. as part of the compact, once those troops are on active duty in that state, they would then implicitly revert to some sort of federal status unless there was some sort of special agreement in place. So rather interesting how it's been used. The deployments were framed as at least by the Trump administration, framed as a necessary measure to enhance public safety and support federal law enforcement efforts, particularly with immigration enforcement. The National Guard troops were tasked with various roles. Now, some of them were tasked, particularly in Los Angeles. You saw them going out in the field. They were carrying their weapons. They were wearing, body armor, and they were there to provide security or protection for federal law enforcement doing immigration enforcement. All right. That was their job. Now, other things that it might be said they're doing, you know, data collection, they cannot retain U.S. persons' information. All right. And, that's federal law. So, and, except as an inadvertent thing, you know, not their primary purpose, anything they collect would be tied to something else, but not a direct collection, intelligence collection mission within the U.S. And but they can provide transportation, logistical support, stuff like that, and they provide security for federal buildings, as I talked about. The administration has claimed these actions are absolutely essential for maintaining order, reducing crime rates. in Washington, D.C., there was a dramatic reduction in crime. I think a lot of that was the deterrent value of seeing armed federal troops on the streets. The fear was that there might be overreach. And certainly when you heard some of the rhetoric about we're sending troops to L.A. to stop the riots or do this stuff, the fear was that they were sending these federalized troops to Los Angeles or to other cities to actually engage, to actually be a law enforcement element. And in that case, they would be violating a law called the Posse Comitatus Act of 1878, which says that federal troops cannot be used in law enforcement authority missions. Judge Breyer in California, a federal judge, actually ruled that he thought that the federalized National Guard troops were violating Posse Comitatus in Southern California. That's going up to the Ninth Circuit Court. That's going to be part of an active discussion. I've read Judge Breyer's decision. I understand where he's coming from, but I think that he probably read too much into a couple of different things. And I would be surprised if the Ninth Circuit affirms his decision. I'm fully expecting the Ninth Circuit Court to turn around and basically toss that decision. But it does say that, you know, you can have minds look at this. There are different opinions on what enforcement, how that gets interpreted, because it's kind of vague on the statute is exactly what that means. Now, Louisiana's Republican governor has asked for National Guard deployments in New Orleans and some other major cities in Louisiana. That was just recently he was asked for this. And he says the state needs help fighting crime. And that's rather interesting that he asked for that. And the question is, what status would they be in? If they're in state active duty status, then the governor has control of them and they're not federal troops. Hence, they could actually do law enforcement stuff. But if they're in federal status, then they are federalized troops. They're federal law enforcement, in which case Posse Comitatus would pertain. And I'm going to get more into this because Arkansas has also brought something else up. Now, there's also a Department of Defense or Department of War memo basically saying that 200 members of the Oregon National Guard were being federalized and deployed. They are currently doing training for civil unrest, counter civil unrest training, and whatever else training they need to do their mission in Woodburn and in Salem, Oregon, and getting ready to deploy up north to Portland, specifically the ICE facility in South Portland, which isn't really overrun with protests as near as I could tell, but they're going to send them up there on a security mission, which they can't. Legally, they can go up there and do that. Although the mayor and the governor are saying this is kind of, you know, this is what the Trump administration is doing is provocative, it's arbitrary, and it's undermining public safety. And they say it's ignoring a public outcry not to do this stuff or causing a public outcry. Anyway, regardless, they've actually filed a court. They filed in court, federal court, to prevent this deployment from happening. But we'll see if anything does come of that. There could be a temporary injunction on it. But other than that, you know, federal government can use federal troops to protect federal property. That's just kind of how that works. Now, Posse Comitatus, obviously, you know, that's a huge issue. You know, they can't violate that unless the president invokes the Insurrection Act, and he has not invoked that. He has not said he's planning on invoking that anytime soon as part of the stuff. Security and protection missions, that's something that federalized troops can do if they're when it's tied to federal property or federal installations. And frankly, federal troops do that all the time at military bases, military offices, military installations. You see, you know, when you go to the front gate, or you'll see federal troops at the front gate, and they're right there. Then there's an issue of Title 32, and Title 32 is it's federal funding that are given to National Guard units to train for their federal mission. There are within any National Guard units a number of National Guard troops personnel. Some are called, you know, they could be in various statuses. It would be on Title 32, and it's part of that readiness, preparedness, training mission to make sure that they are ready to meet their federal military mandated mission as a federal military unit, as a military part of the Department of War, Department of Defense, is to meet that purpose. However, this was brought up some years back as there was they're saying, look, when you mobilize National Guard troops to do this stuff under state active duty, We have a number of key billet holders in the unit that are under Title 32 status. And it's difficult to activate the unit under state active duty to go do a law enforcement mission and do a civil support mission and drop these Title 32 folks from their mission or doing a Title 10 mission, which is totally federal mission, and drop these Title 32. So they got a kind of a waiver saying, oh, like, okay, we understand that this will happen. And those key billet holders can also deploy with unit in the field, and we'll just try and get them switched over to the correct, administrative status as fast as possible. We'll allow them to do it. That was kind of like the foot in the door. Now you have the governor of Arkansas saying, hey, I'd like to bring up my National Guard troops into federal status to deal with all these crime problems. But he's saying, I want to bring up in Title 32 status, which is supposed to be federal money to pay for federal training, federal readiness, federal preparedness mission as a federal military asset. He's saying, no, I want to bring them in, but I want the federal government to pay for it all. But I want to retain my authority as a governor so they can go out there and do law enforcement missions that would not be in violation of posse comitatus because they're not federal troops. And now you're getting into a very interesting thing, which is, when are you federal and when are you not federal? And that's a big issue. And I think this thing is something that I've been looking at for years. I used to work Defense Support Civil Authorities in uniform. I used to work under U.S. Northern Command. I used to work under the Marine Component Command called Marine Forces North. I used to do this stuff in the Pacific too, under what's now Indo-Pacific Command, doing civil support missions. I used to do this. I used to train this with the National Guard. I used to train them on how to do this stuff and with other entities as well. And I have found this slippery slope that's been taking place over the last, I want to say maybe 17, 18 years. Ever since they did, I believe it was a G7 or G8 conference in Sea Island in Georgia, they've been doing this sort of thing with dual hat joint task forces and all sorts of stuff. And it's Title 32 things open the door. So the question is, are those federally recognized troops on active duty being paid for with federal funds? Are they federal military? And I think that's going to get challenged. And it's going to be very interesting when it does, because my next question would be, all right, so if that's the case, and it turns out that this was wrong, what about all those other times before where this was being done? Do the states need to reimburse the federal government for that? How does that work? So I think this is going to be an interesting thing. I think this is a decision that's long overdue, but it's something that needs to be done because it does open up the door. That does open the door to potential abuse, that a governor, let's say a Republican governor, goes to a Republican president and says, hey, I want to bring these guys in. I want to do law enforcement. And it actively circumvents posse comitatus. The president is actually paying for troops to go in, military troops to go into a major city to do this stuff under Title 32 status. So they respond to the governor, but are they federal military? And I think that's something that eventually will have to go to the Supreme Court. They're going to have to sort that out. And this really isn't a partisan issue. This slippery slope really started going this direction under the Obama administration. And by the time the Biden administration came around, this was like the way they did business. So, but I do feel it is time that this gets addressed and gets taken a look at. Now, Judge Breyer, a federal judge in California, looked at what the military troops, the federalized National Guard, was doing in California, along with the Marines who were deployed here. And in his view, he thinks that this did violate posse comitatus. Again, as I brought up, I do think the Ninth Circuit is going to take a look at this, and I think that's going to go another way. But they did not look at the Title 32 because I don't think that was a big issue, as I recall. They just brought those units up in Title 10 status, which is federal military status. Okay, that's enough on the domestic side. Now, let's also talk about the other part of the Western Hemisphere. You know, President Trump declared the drug cartels to be, narco or terrorist organizations, narco-terrorist organizations. And then he just clarified that he also sees the members of those cartels to be unlawful combatants. And he has said that the U.S. is now in a non-international armed conflict with these unlawful combatants. And this is interesting. This is a memo that was sent out. It was obtained by the Associated Press. And it also is following U.S. strikes on narco cartel boats, narco terrorist boats, if you will, in the Caribbean, where the boats were, you know, clearly full of illicit narcotics. And instead of trying to stop the boats, you know, shoot the engines out or do what we normally do, we simply did a strike mission on the boats and took out the boats and everybody on the boat, which was much more of a military, very kinetic sort of way of dealing with that issue. But again, they had been redesignated as terrorist groups, so you end up in a little bit different area of international law. Our justification is, they said, hey, we see a threat. They're bringing dangerous, deadly narcotics into the United States. That poses a threat to public safety and or national security, and therefore they, you know, went ahead and took out the boat before it could get to the U.S. shores. All right, this memo that's come out is interesting. It signals a potential movement, if you will, within the Trump administration's willingness to reach beyond previous norms of authority, and it's often, you know, seen as part of a larger, you know, part of maybe a larger America First quote unquote agenda or whatever. But it also raises some questions about what are we going to do with these unlawful combatants. And during the war on terror after 9/11, you know, we dealt with terrorists and they weren't lawful combatants from a normal nation state. They weren't normal criminals either, because they, you know, they did declare war or a jihad against the United States. And many of them were rendered to what was called black sites. These are places where they didn't have the rights of a lawful combatant under the Geneva Convention, but then again, they didn't have the rights of a criminal defendant either. And they were held. And one of the more famous places, what wasn't really a black site because everybody knew about it, was down Guantanamo, that we had rendered a number of these terrorists to Guantanamo, and they were kind of in this gray, nebulous legal status where they were being held, but it wasn't quite clear what they were, you know, what their status was, because they weren't lawful combatants and neither were they regular criminals. So it was a rather interesting situation. The question is, you know, we saw that with unlawful combatants with groups like Al-Qaeda and ISIS and other terrorist groups since 9/11. But the question is, what is going to be done with, you know, if they arrest a cartel member in the United States, all right? And let's say that they're a U.S. citizen. Are they an unlawful combatant? What status would they be under? This is going to raise a lot of interesting legal questions, and I do think that at some point the courts are going to weigh in, probably fairly soon, to try and sort this out to figure out where they are. And of course, there'll probably be stuff where they say, well, are they a U.S. citizen or not a U.S. citizen? That would be my guess. And then if they're not a U.S. citizen, then the next question would be, so what do we do with these individuals? What can we do with these individuals? It raises a lot of obvious questions as to what is their status, legally speaking, under the law. All right. So a couple of big things to look at, a couple of things I think that we need to see, but I think the courts are going to have to sort out this Title 32 with the National Guard to find out what can be done, because that is a very interesting status where the federal government is paying to bring on active duty, federalized, recognized military members to go into states that would be doing something that would appear to be a violation of federal law, which is law enforcement, because they'd be under the governor's authority if they did that. And Arkansas is putting this to the test. Louisiana may put this to the test. I think it has been kind of put to the test for some time, but that's going to get sorted out. And then the next thing is this unlawful combatant status. What is that going to mean as it's practiced here within the United States? And then how it's practiced, you know, should we take prisoners, if you will, in dealing with the narco cartels? We could end up with, you know, particularly at sea, we could end up with individuals that are effectively in our custody. What legal status are they in? And I think the courts are going to have to work all of this out. Anyway, thanks for listening to Strat. Please go to stratpodcast.com. You can go to my YouTube channel, Hal Kempfert TV. You can always go to my website, or my company's website, I should say, Global Risk Intelligence Planning's website, GRIPSA, that's GRIPSA.com. And thanks, and I hope you listen to the next one.